Hey everybody, this is Albert Escobedo, your host for the Pet Peeves podcast. Just asking if you like my podcast, if you're enjoying the content and what you're listening to, become a sponsor. Find the link on the Anchor, the sponsor link on my Anchor website, and or on the SoundCloud website. Wherever you find the descriptions for these episodes, you can find the link to become a sponsor. For $1 a month, $5 a month, $10 a month, help the podcast grow. Thank you guys very much. Thank you for listening. Bye. Thank you for listening to the Pet Peeves podcast, hosted by me, comedian Albert Escobedo. I am a registered veterinary technician and not a doctor, so please consult your private veterinarian before taking my advice. Thank you and enjoy the episode.
What's going on? What's up, everybody? Thank you for coming to the show. Ask Albert anything. Q&A show with Michael Beagley.
Hey, what's up, everybody? So this is a new show for the Pet Peeves podcast. We're going to do some Q&A and ask Albert, our expert here, all of you guys' pet questions. So we're just starting the show out. So what I did was I looked up the top Googled pet questions for March 2022, and it is currently March 2022. So we're going to start out with some most Googled questions. It's going to help us with the algorithm a little bit. And then as this show goes on, please email us your questions and we will get those into the show as well. Okay. So
that's right.
Any words before we get started, Albert?
No, I'm happy to try this new format. I really think that these questions are very, very relatable and hopefully we can help a lot of people. And please send us your questions and comments. And we hope to help as many of you pet owners and animal lovers as possible.
For sure. All right. Well, let's get started. First question is, are pets getting COVID? I don't know about you guys in LA, but here in Belgium, they just lifted the mask mandates. So things are starting to look a little bit more like 2019 this week. And actually most of this month, it's been kind of nice. But people are still getting COVID. People are still getting COVID in Belgium. I know they're still getting COVID in the United States. So what about pets? How's it been going with pets getting COVID?
I don't think anybody's ever really confirmed that animals ever got COVID-19, the virus that humans get. I know that there were stories and reports of certain animals carrying it and giving it to people, which I understand being a possibility. But I don't think any animals ever got COVID-19 that humans get. There's just very few diseases or viruses that animals and humans share. Aside from like rabies, I really don't know of that many diseases that we share with animals. The COVID-19 coming from a bat thing, I don't know if that was ever confirmed. I don't even know. But for like you pet owners out there, the only concern I ever heard was if somebody who has COVID sneezes or coughs or something on your pet, and then you go and touch your pet and then you put your hand in your mouth. Yes, you could get yourself COVID that way. There are other kinds of coronaviruses that cats and dogs carry. Dogs and cats carry a variety of kinds of coronaviruses, very contagious between the animals, these coronaviruses, things that you're probably getting vaccinated for, like parvovirus, things like that. So if you have any pet coronaviruses that you're worried about, those are existing. Those exist. But ones that we could get from our pets and give to each other, not that I know of, and nothing that I ever heard about COVID-19. But definitely, if you have COVID, your pet should probably not be pet by other people. Don't cough on your pets. That's my advice.
Yeah, well, yeah, try not to cough on any living thing other than maybe a plant, right? Yeah, no, that's kind of surprising. I didn't realize rabies was one of the few diseases that spreads from humans to animals and vice versa. I guess that's why it's such a big deal.
Animals,
because I know animals can get
zoonotic diseases.
Like,
they call them
Yeah, animals can get colds and everything, though, right?
They have their own types of colds.
Yeah,
Yeah, there's feline influenza viruses and canine influenza viruses. So those exist, but it's not like they get them from us or we give them to them.
Okay. So no reported cases that you know of animals getting killed, but there's a possibility. So, you know, don't sneeze. Don't get COVID and sneeze in your cat's mouth. Yeah.
Correct. And people like to, you know, the reality is people definitely let their pets lick their face. So that's something that can happen.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I have a cat and, I mean, I get it in my cat's face and this and that. I don't know about licking my cat's face, but you know,
to each their own.
Yeah, for sure.
I try not to judge. You want to make out with your pet as long as it's consensual.
So I got COVID for my first time earlier this month and was really surprised. Well, we self-quarantined and this and that, but we'd heard stories from other people where their wives or their partners didn't get it. And then eventually my wife got it, but it was only after about 3-4 days that she ended up picking it up from me. And like, you know, we stopped kissing and things like that, but we were a little bit more careless around each other because we just figured. So I guess with pets, I guess they travel close to the ground typically. So maybe just keep them in their element. Maybe don't let them sleep. Would you say like, don't let them sleep in your bed maybe, or?
I guess, I mean, that would help any kind of distancing, quarantining, or just, not direct contact, but yeah. I don't know. I guess it's pretty hard to do if you're already letting them sleep with you and everything like that.
Yeah.
I did want to go back a question. It's not parvovirus. That's a pet coronavirus. Yeah. For cats, it's FIP. You ever heard of FIP for cats?
No. No. I'd be lying if I said yeah.
We should do a whole episode about FIP, but it is a feline coronavirus that is previously considered deadly, but there's been a lot of new developing treatments for this disease, FIP, and it just happens to be a feline coronavirus, so I think it's super interesting. Mm-hmm. But previously, I said parvovirus. I did not mean that.
Okay. But I'll make a note of that. FIP, we should talk about
that. Yeah, we should do it. We should, for sure.
Cool. The next Google question was, are pets allowed in stores? This one was actually kind of interesting. There were several things that were Googled. Are pets allowed in Home Depot? Are pets allowed in Lowe's? Are pets allowed in different stores? And here in Belgium, pets are allowed, I mean, almost anywhere. You can go to a lot of stores. I would say a lot of restaurants, pets aren't allowed. But a lot of stores, they are. But then again, if you go to a restaurant and you have a dog, there's always a patio. It's springtime right now, and it's awfully comfortable to take your dog out in the patio, and we see a lot of that. But what's it like in LA, and do you know, is it different state to state?
I'm 100% sure it is different state to state. In California, it's kind of, but the rule I would say is that you are allowed to take your pet into almost every store or restaurant, especially if you have a specialized license for your pet. Say it's an emotional support animal or a disability animal that helps with a disability, seeing eye dogs or things like that. Not just for emotional support, not just dogs for social anxiety and things like that. So there are all different types of licenses that you can bring your pet with you everywhere you go. Mm-hmm. The stores and restaurants or public places, they have different rules for what they'll allow and not allow. But in general, you should be able to bring your animal anywhere if you have one of these specialized licenses, and the stores shouldn't ask you about it unless your pet is causing a problem. Mm-hmm. So that's the gray area. Mm-hmm. If your pet is not causing a problem and you take it in somewhere with you, they're probably not going to ask you any questions because they could get in a lot of trouble if you do have a particular license, because it's against the law or it's probably against the law and against like privacy acts to ask somebody what's wrong with them medically. They don't have to answer those questions. So they can see it as harassment or bias or anything mm-hmm. like that. So they should never ask you unless your pet is causing a problem. And if you are getting the proper licenses for your pet, they ask certain questions. Can your pet sit, come, stay? Do they have those kinds of basic training? And if you say yes, but you're lying, you know, that's on you. I think it's really hard to control those types of licenses. So people shouldn't take advantage of it. That's the advice that I give. Don't take advantage of those types of licenses. If you have a pet license, you could take your pet anywhere. It is, you know, for certain people, but can you take your pet anywhere? Yes, you could take your pet anywhere if it has the proper license. But are they going to ask you about it if you don't have a license? They're not going to ask you unless your pet is causing problems. Mm-hmm. So there's the gray area.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think that, you know, the licensing is kind of interesting because I haven't seen that as required in Belgium. It seems to be pretty loose regarding that. They're pretty loose here regarding a lot of things, though. For example, being off leash is something here that's, you know, I hate to be the Yankee migrant over here being picky about laws, but I almost think that the off-leash laws are too lenient. And I'm not saying that because of people who do the right thing and pay attention to their dog and get their dog proper training, you know, but I'm talking about those people, you know, the idiots I'm talking about. They're on their cell phone at the park. They let their dog go. We took our cat to the emergency vet clinic on a weekend, right? And there was another guy there with his dog, and his dog was just attacked by another dog, and the other dog's owner was just on his cell phone the whole time. So, you know, I think it's unfortunate that, you know, it might be a little extra from my vantage point that you require a license like this, but it does create a system of accountability, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think here in Belgium, there's almost not enough licensing. There's not enough rules, and you get some of these instances, you know. So,
yeah, it's hard to judge because what I think happens is people have a pet, a dog or cat or whatever, and they have had really good experiences off leash where nothing went wrong. Mm-hmm. So they get overconfident. Mm-hmm. They pay less attention. They let their guard down, and then something happens. And you can't blame dogs for being dogs or cats for being cats. They're just going to do what they're, you know, naturally imposed to do.
Right.
And I never feel safe. I took my dog out for a walk this morning, and I took her to the park across the street, and there's no fencing, and I let her off leash, and my head is on a swivel. I'm making sure there's no dogs coming. I'm making sure there's no other people. I'm making sure she doesn't leave the park or go out of the street. But could she dart out on me and make it to the street and something happen? Or could another dog that's also off leash, who's has an owner doing the similar thing that I'm doing, run across each other and bad things happen? Absolutely. Absolutely. So is it a bad idea? It's definitely not a good idea to keep your pets off leash. But you know, there's hardly an opportunity to do it safely. Yeah. Even if you're at a gated in dog park, you have to worry about other dogs and how they're going to react and stuff like that. So it's really, really hard. I think unless you have your own gated backyard or you have like, you know, the access to a private beach or something like that, you're kind of having to trust the people around you. And like you said, hope that everybody's doing what they're supposed to do. And that the hope that the person that knows they have a potentially aggressive pet or somebody that knows their dog wants to chase squirrels and run across the street, that you're not letting them off leash. Yeah. My dog is pretty well trained. My dog and I have a lot of experience together. And I know I'm sounding like a hypocrite because that's what I'm saying other people do. They get overconfident, but that's when bad things happen. And if it happens to me, I warned myself. I knew the risks. I knew what I was doing. And hopefully we just minimize those risks by really not looking at your phone and not, you know, getting lost and staring at the clouds or whatever happens when you're outside and it's beautiful and things are distracting. You have to pay attention to your dog like you're paying attention to your child, I guess.
You know, one of the themes of doing this show the last 6 years that's come up a lot is the idea of like, if you raise your awareness as a pet owner, you can prepare yourself for all the risks. And I like that that's something you said. It's you have to know the risks and you have to, you know, accept responsibility no matter what happens. But if you are vigilant, if your head is on a swivel, there's certain liberties you can take, but it's all dependent upon risk level. Am I getting that right? Would you say that's accurate?
Absolutely. I also go to take my dog when it's really early and there's not a lot of people out and there's not a lot of cars out. You know, there are ways to minimize risk.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think when it comes to taking pets to stores, though, so I'm a cat owner currently, but I had a dog growing up, and I think this is probably more of a dog thing. Would you agree? Taking an animal to a store typically.
Yeah, the question that people are asking, can you take your pets to a store? I think it is probably mostly talking about dogs. There are people who I've seen trying to, what I saw in the news, somebody was trying to bring a pony, an emotional support pony into a store, and people bring in their emotional support parrot to the store and emotional support iguana to the store. So, yeah. I mean, it's fine. I really, me as an animal lover and animal advocate, I think if you really have that issue,
mm-hmm.
and that is your emotional support animal, then, you know, more power to you. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because something that I heard recently that when I leave my pet, somebody was telling me that when they leave their pet home alone, that they feel anxiety. That leaving it alone in the cage or leaving it alone in the apartment, that they don't know what's happening and they're worried that something's going to happen to their pet. So it's for their own anxiety, they bring the pet along, maybe not the pet's anxiety. And I was like, okay, that's an interesting point. That makes sense. You can't have fun. You can't relax because it's like leaving a baby alone. You don't know what's going to happen. So I kind of understand that. So I think pets should be allowed in stores as long as the pet is well-behaved and well-trained and that person accepts responsibility. And whether they're in Home Depot or McDonald's, as long as the pet isn't causing trouble, whether it, I don't know, there's got to be a line drawn. I don't want to see people's emotional
right.
support.
Well, and you probably want to support business owners as well. And if they say no pets, they say no pets, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to lose business that way, but if that's your rule, no pets over 40 pounds or something, that maybe would make sense.
Although nothing my friends have a greyhound and their greyhound's pretty well behaved, you know? I mean, greyhounds are pretty chill. They just need like a bed.
Yeah. See, you know? I don't know what it is. There's got to be like a, you know, you get a bouncer at the club and they're checking IDs. There's got to be somebody at every store checking like breeds and species. Like,
yeah.
You have to be on a list.
I think I remember seeing an episode of Gordon Ramsay when I think it was Hell's Kitchen. Anyway, no, it wasn't that. It was when he goes in for 24 hours or 48 hours or something and he makes
Kitchen Nightmares or something.
Yeah, that one. Yeah. And there was one where it was the idea was they have a menu for dogs and they have a menu for humans. And so it's
there
like you take your dog to the restaurant, but they had no rules. And they had no – and for example, one of the rules that they needed to implement was no dogs on the table because it was,
I was going to say that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like grossing out people who went to the cafe who didn't have dogs, you know?
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that because right before we started recording, I thought that in my head that as long as your dog's not up on the table or trying to get other people's food, you're probably going to not be asked for that licensing proof.
Right. Right. You know, I mean, we have very few rules at our house, but not on the table is one of them, you know, and we always tell Salty, you know, we don't walk on the table, so you don't get to either. I don't care.
My cat does not listen to my rules. As soon as I'm not looking, she's back on the table.
Rules are meant to be broken, but
I have the spray bottle method.
For sure. Yep. We have two different spray bottles. We have one with lemon juice to spray our plants that we don't want her to munch on, and then we just have the water one for discipline, but
the water
it's always
one
out
is,
of reach.
It's all purpose, the water one. It's for the plants, it's for the bearded dragon, and it's for aversion therapy.
There you go. There you go. Just got to have a humidifier in the house going at all times, you know?
A mister. Mm-hmm. Like at the grocery store.
All right, let's check out this next question. This one, I don't even know the answer to this one. Can pets get lice?
Yes, they can. Dogs and cats and large animals I know about more getting lice, like sheep and horses. So animals that live together in like an outside enclosure that can get outside parasites like lice. I mean, all parasites are coming from the outside, but something like lice, they're going to get from another animal. And it's from animals that sleep together, usually in large groups. Like sheep, when it's cold, they all huddle together. So all these animals that huddle together when it's cold and they're sleeping like in a barn, they pass the lice back and forth to each other. Now, a pet like a dog or a cat, from what I've seen and read and heard, that they get it if they are also like homeless pets that live with homeless people or live in like homeless environments, sleeping in garbage, basically, where you're going to have rats that have lice.
Yeah.
And then they can get it. Lice is just another blood-sucking parasite. They're just kind of big. So it's hard for you to, like your pet, to get them at home. But say if I have lice, which is more likely that I'm giving lice to my pet, then the pet can carry the lice. But they're big. You could see them. Mm-hmm. So you're going to probably do something about it. I don't ever see any cases of lice in my experience in a dog or a cat. I've had people tell me that their dog or cat has lice. Mm-hmm. And upon inspection, it's probably mites. Or fleas or something else. I've never actually seen lice on a pet except for in books and on the internet. Mm-hmm. So I know they can get them, but I've never actually seen it. Mm-hmm. But the lice are treated just like any other of the ectoparasites, the outside parasites. They have, you know, just like a pill or a topical treatment that you give to prevent it, just like you would for fleas or ticks. And the lice that I've seen, maybe possibly I saw lice on dogs when I was in Thailand. I kind of remember seeing some different kinds of parasites then. And they were just big. They were just big, but they looked just like lice. I don't know if you know what lice look like, but they look like little, like almost like termites, I guess. But yes, pets can get them. It's just pretty rare. Maybe if you're like in a third world country or.
I got some lice photos I just pulled up.
Yeah. Can you show those?
Yeah. Just got it on the shared screen. You see that?
No, it still says the question.
It's sharing the here. Let me pop this up there. How's that?
There we go.
Yeah.
Yes.
Ooh.
That's what they look like.
See, and when I heard of lice, I was thinking about in the hair.
Yeah, for sure.
This is making me, it's making my hair itch like psychosomatically.
Yeah,
you know, I think it's interesting you bring up the homeless population because we see a lot of homeless folks in Brussels. They have dogs, you know, they have companions. Mm. They need companionship like anybody else. But it's interesting that there are different things that a vet has to think of for the homeless population and for their dogs.
Absolutely.
Or you know, whatever pet. It makes perfect sense. It's something I didn't think about. I guess most people we know have pretty good hygiene in the 21st century compared to what we've had in previous centuries. So this lice problem was probably a bigger deal in years past. Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. Probably. And then also, like I'm saying, I don't know what people deal with if they're sleeping in large groups together and whatever their lifestyle is. Maybe if you're somebody that just has that lifestyle and you're sleeping in large groups together in a room just for warmth.
Yeah. Well, and they checked us for lice in school. Remember that?
Yeah,
like, they would check our hair for lice stuff like that because we're in a school together. So if one kid gets it, it's a chance that everybody gets it.
Yeah, you know? Kids are all over each other, on top of each other. Exactly.
Yeah. I wonder if does it happen in kennels?
Not that I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Fleas, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And we just gave Salty a bath and her flea treatment. She did better with her bath, though. Thank you for that advice to give Salty a bath, hopefully every month, but at least every quarter. We've been giving her a bath every couple months now, and we do it before the flea treatment. It really helps, you know?
Oh, yeah. That's a big deal. Don't get them wet 24 hours before or after the flea treatment.
Right. But we do it, then let her dry for a couple days, and then there we go, you know?
There you go. Yeah.
So, and she's a lot less stinky. So she's an outdoor cat too. So, all right, next one. Can pets fly on airplanes?
This is an easy one. Yes, right? Have you ever taken your pets on the airplane?
So I haven't, but I know of the paperwork necessary and I actually have a somewhat interesting anecdote. So we have a cat, it has a passport. It was a stray, but then we got it chipped. It has a passport. And so that passport means we can take Salty to, you know, any country where we can go. So we can take her back to Canada, United States, anywhere else in Europe. But the problem is that in most countries, rabies has not yet been eradicated. But in Belgium, actually, rabies has been eradicated. So she's not required to have a rabies vaccine. But if we want to leave the country and take her with us to a country where rabies has not been eradicated, which is many countries, we have to get a rabies vaccine for her not fewer than 28 days. So basically a month before we have to go minimum. Eventually we're going to want to take her to a foreign country and we'll have to do that then. But yeah, pet passports, that's some necessary paperwork for taking them to different countries. But state to state, yeah, you can take them on domestic flights, right?
You definitely can. Obviously, if you're driving your pet, the paperwork is the same, but I doubt anybody's going to ask you for it.
Right.
But to get your pet on the airplane specifically, they're definitely going to want some records. Mm-hmm. And the record is a health certificate.
Okay.
Pretty sure that's what it's called. It's a health certificate or health care certificate. Pretty sure it's a health certificate.
Okay.
But it's just a medical record stating that they have all their current vaccines, whether they're spayed or neutered, and whether they have a 1 year versus 3 year rabies. Obviously, age, species, the gender of your pet, those things are going to be on the record, and probably like a microchip is going to be required. I'm pretty sure, and they're going to want like an international type of microchip that can be scanned and read into these international databases.
Yeah.
Things like rabies, I'm guessing, are going to be required across the board because different countries, different states have different requirements. But for the United States, I'm pretty sure rabies is required across the board. In every single state, at least in some form, they are accepting the 3-year rabies more than I'm familiar with. When I was first coming up, it was always a 1 year, 1 year, 1 year. And 3-year rabies was more for people who either couldn't bring their pet to the vet or were against it, or could somehow give an excuse or sign off a medical waiver for that type of advice, the against the medical advice waivers. But the rabies, even in the places where it's really low, like a low incidence of rabies, they're still requiring it. Even here in California, I'm pretty sure there's a really, really low rate of rabies, at least in Los Angeles County, that there's hardly any rabies. They still require it because they know people leave the state and come back, and people leave the area and come back. So that's why they require the vaccines.
Until it's entirely eradicated, that makes sense. Mm. You know, that's just how vaccination works. Are there any rule of thumbs you can give, generally speaking, for I'm sure the flying experience can be quite traumatic for some pets. Maybe some pets can handle it, but is there anything you can maybe recommend across the board, or maybe a couple things?
Yeah, first of all, get those vaccines updated, and even the ones that your vet doesn't necessarily offer, find out what the airline requires. They might need something like Bordetella, or you never know, like Lyme disease or something weird that particular airline requires, or the country that you're going to. The country you're going to might require specific things. So do some research on what you need, not what your veterinarian knows. Mm-hmm. Your veterinarian might not know. So other than that, you're going to have some way to keep your pet in a carrier most of the time, carrying on an airplane. Maybe you can seat it in your lap. I think that that's allowed on some airlines, but in the transporting process, at some point, you're going to have them in a carrier or in a crate. So if your pet is not crate trained or carrier trained, and you're waiting to right before you take a long flight, that could be pretty stressful for your pet. So I recommend crate training and carrier training well before the plane ride. And I recommend that for every pet, regardless, even if you don't plan on getting on an airplane, even if you hate airplanes and you know you'll never be on one, crate training and carrier training is useful for a lot of other things, especially if and when your pet ever gets injured or has to be boarded or be in an animal hospital or any place that's not home, where they're going to definitely put it into an enclosure. And your pet has never been in one before, can cause a lot of stress and anxiety. So before getting on the airplane, please crate train and carrier train your pets. Give them a lot of training. That training doesn't take a week or a month. That training takes a while for your pet to get comfortable with it, especially if they're already not used to it. If you start when they're young, it's definitely a lot easier.
Right. And growing up with dogs, I mean, once they get that training, if you do it with a gentle hand, you know, the crate kind of becomes their place. This is their home. And
proper
they
crate
actually,
training focuses on that if you're doing it right, the animals prefer the crate over everything else anyway, as a sleeping location, as their den.
It's like privacy, you know? Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just like, I like having a bedroom, you know what I mean? So
exactly.
Yeah. The other one was, I had some friends move from Belgium to United States recently, to Colorado, and they found a street dog from Lithuania. They were in like an adoption service, and this dog it was just kind of hyper and just had a lot of anxiety. And I think they had their dog on Trazodone, if I remember right. For like anxiety reduction. And they definitely had the dog on Trazodone for the flight, because they were, and that was, their vet told them to do that.
Good point.
And that was something they did. So I was wondering if you can elaborate on this. That's one of them, but is there any like drug treatment for anxiety? I mean, it's gotta be the engines and everything. It has to be really noisy and really bringing up a lot of anxiety in these dogs. So.
Yes. Thanks, Michael. Thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, there are. I'm really glad you did. I would have been sad if we didn't mention it, that there are options for treatments, drugs, medications that can make your pets less anxious, less stressed, sedatives. Right. So you're talking about Trazodone. Trazodone works like a sedative, and it just kind of takes the edge off. In my experience, Trazodone is, you know, some dogs, especially I've seen it calm them down a little bit before a vet visit. Like, say we know this dog's not going to do well with a nail trim or an ear cleaning, they'll give them some Trazodone. Or if they're about to travel, they'll give them some Trazodone, but they'll start dosing it out ahead of the treatment.
Yeah.
Days ahead of time, or at least the day before, to try to get that on board. So that's an option, trazodone. They have like fluoxetine, the Prozac, that would work. What else do they put? Ace promazine, this other kind of a sedative that they use for calming pets down for storms and fireworks. There's dextromethor. That's one I've seen in a transdermal gel that helps pets to be calm for pets for travel and transport.
Yeah.
I think that those things are good options if you know your pet's going to have a really bad reaction, because there's some pets that just really, really, no matter how much crate training you do, they're going to have a bad reaction.
Right.
Also, if it's a really long trip, you might want to utilize something like that. If it were my pet, I would try really hard not to rely on those drugs, because I know that it's going to wear off. So it's, if it wears off and they're still in there for whatever reason, that could be a really big problem.
Okay, that's
so
interesting.
It's not ideal, but it'll work, especially if it's a short trip. Also, if you've used it before and you know what to expect. You know, we had a dog when I was little that was really afraid of storms, so we used the Ace Promazine all the time. I'm from Indiana. It was stormy and rainy a lot.
Right.
So we would we got really comfortable with the dosages and the amounts of time and how to give it to her to make it have the effect that we desired. So that for travel, you know, some experimentation might be good. Maybe take them for a car ride before and see how they do. Yeah. Maybe take them, you know, in a simulation of some sort, like in the car. I think a car is a good way to simulate a long trip in a carrier or in a crate.
That's a good point. That's a good point. We've started to normalize the carrier with Salty, our cat, and just to take her out to things that weren't the vet, for example. Mm-hmm. I told you about that when you were visiting. Like, we take her to the park and put her on a leash and just and go let her have outdoor experiences. So when she looks at the carrier, she doesn't necessarily think, oh no, I'm going to get my shots. I want her to
generalizing those behaviors is really important. Take them to places that at the end, it's not a bad experience. Yeah. That whatever they did, it wasn't just the vet visit.
Right. When it comes to the drugs, you know, I've heard anecdotes of people using like over-the-counter human drugs like Benadryl, but that probably doesn't sound like a good idea. It seems like something you want to have a conversation with your vet. It seems like you want to get dosages right. Maybe
Benadryl can be prescribed. People can prescribe Benadryl to their dog, or a veterinarian can prescribe Benadryl for like motion sickness and for stress relief. I don't recommend people looking up doses online. Benadryl is pretty safe, not to give people the green light to just be using it. But I do think if you know, if people look up, say your doctor has recommended it to you before.
Yeah.
You know, they're saying, hey, you can just use over-the-counter Benadryl and you want to repeat that dosage another time. I mean, I hate to say on the air that it's not going to cause any problems, but Benadryl is pretty safe. I'll say that. But you should definitely get your doctor's recommendations. But Benadryl will work some of the time, probably not that much for you to be taking the risk of just self-prescribing.
Well, and just to reiterate, we put that disclaimer up at the beginning of the video for a reason. You know, this is, we're just having a conversation, but definitely this is something where you begin getting information and then you go talk to your vet, you know?
Absolutely. So. If you look it up and it tells you you can try Benadryl, and then you ask your veterinarian, can I try Benadryl? They'll probably tell you the same thing. Yes, you can, but I wouldn't recommend doing it without a doctor's recommendation.
Yeah. And some of these other things like trazodone, you have to have a prescription, you know?
Yeah, those are prescription drugs.
Yeah.
Exactly. So there's that difference. But even for you, for people who take Benadryl to help them sleep and stuff like that, you know, it's pretty safe drug.
Okay. Good to know. Yeah. I'm looking forward to one day taking Salty on an airplane, but that is going to be a stressful day for us. I'm going to be protective papa and concerned about it, but it's good to know that we should simulate it, you know, like, and try to build that into it. Try to take her on a car trip. We've been talking about maybe taking her to like get an Airbnb in the woods and then maybe taking her there and then taking a little bit of a litter. Cats are just different. You don't take cats on trips like dogs. So we've been reading a lot of stuff online to try to get some advice about that. I'd love to do a show about that sometime.
We should. People are normalizing it, so we should definitely talk about it.
Yeah, for sure. All right, what's the next question? Can pets carry bed bugs? This is kind of like along the same thing as lice.
Yeah. Yeah. It is kind of along the same thing. I've never heard of any pets carrying bed bugs. I've never seen any pets carrying bed bugs, but I'm absolutely sure if you have bed bugs and your pets are in or around your bed, they could definitely spread them from one place to the other. Definitely. But can bed bugs live on your pets? I don't think so. I doubt it.
Okay. Okay. This one we could talk about for 5 hours. So this is an interesting Googled question. This was the one that sums it up, but a lot of people were asking, can pets help with depression? Can pets help with anxiety? So there's like different mental health phenomena, different, not even mental illness necessarily, but definitely different mental health symptoms that I think people are wondering, at least according to Google, how can pets help with this? And are certain pets different than other pets in some aspects?
I think that the obvious answer is yes, pets can definitely help with mental health. I think most people have a pet because they know this answer to be true, that the pets will help you in a number of ways. I think to me, the biggest benefit to having a pet, or the strongest bonds, are built because the pets are non-judgmental companions and they're extremely honest and genuine compared to a human being companion. With the animal, with the pet, it's all genuine. There's no lies. There's no secret agendas. There's no underlying themes. It's all just for love and attention. So I think that alone helps people, because their mental health revolves around anxiety and fears and acceptance and, success and failure and all these human differentiations, all these comparisons we do with each other. But your pet is never comparing itself to you, and you don't have to compare yourself to your pet. And it's just like a therapy. It's a therapist that just listens. They just listen. They just take it all in, and they're going to love you the same afterwards, no matter what happens. And I think that's the mental health aspect, because a lot of mental disability or mental disease, I think, comes from people not having that comfort, that ability to know everything's going to be all right. And the pets give us that emotion. Everything's okay, at least in this moment. Everything's going to be all right. I'm with my pet, and my pet loves me, and I love him back, or her back. And I think that's the obvious answer. I'm sure people have very specific reasons why their right. pet is helping their particular kind of mental health, whatever your pet provides for you. But I'm sure a lot of it is just genuine companionship, just having somebody there to talk to, a friend, a best friend.
Yeah. I mean, companionship and combating mental health symptoms, I think, definitely goes hand in hand. I know I've struggled with mental health issues before, and I think having a roommate, a furry roommate who doesn't have a job, who their main goal in life is their main goals are loving you, receiving love, play. Like, it's kind of nice to have a roommate where their priorities seem more in line, because when you see in societies in rich countries, increases in anxiety, increases in depression rates, increases in ADHD, for example. I'm not a psychologist, but everybody knows that these rates are increasing. As we are becoming richer countries, I think we have to stop and think, what is it about this modern society that's making a lot of people depressed? It's making a lot of people anxious. And I think when you have a pet, sometimes you can have this, again, this member of your family, this furry roommate, this provider of comedy, and love, who can teach you a little bit about maybe reorganizing your priorities. Sometimes when I'm feeling depressed, I play with my cat. I feel less depressed. Sometimes it sounds simple, but maybe the simple thing is true.
No, I think you also mentioned another part, like just being active, getting off the couch, getting out of your comfort space, and right. getting out of bed to take the dog for a walk, or to even clean the litter box, or your cat, wakes you up in the middle of the night because it wants attention. Like, that's getting you, keeping you active, keeping your blood flowing, your blood pressure from getting too low, and that interaction for stimulation, mental stimulation, physical stimulation, emotional stimulation. Say if you didn't have that and you were just alone all day, or say you had a human roommate that you didn't have the ability to go pet whenever you want, and to pick up and hold and cuddle whenever you want. You're not getting the same amount of stimulation and interaction and codependence, that you could call it, to help with those kinds of feelings of depression and just what would you call it? Lethargy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're going to kill two birds with one stone here. You're going to work on your cardiovascular health. You're going to get out of the house. You're going to breathe some fresh air. If you have fresh air, there's been a smog alert in Brussels lately, so I don't know how fresh the air is. I mean, you live in LA, you know what that's like, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad I'm going to get some fresh air. Hopefully the weather clears up here. It's getting a little sunny. I got a little sunburn. I was at the beach. As long as the sun keeps coming out, I'm happy. I could go get away from the smog and head towards the coast.
Well, and you said you go on early morning walks too, and that can't hurt, right?
No, the air is nice and fresh.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So, you know, I just think our pets, if you do it right, the pet ownership can really just improve various aspects of health. There's one thing you said on a Pet Peeves podcast. I forget which episode it was, but it was a couple years ago. And you said you should play with your pet for at least an hour every day. Now, I'm not saying I hit my hour every day. Sometimes life gets busy, but that's always resonated with me. And I think I have an advantage being the editor of this podcast is even before we got before Salty, even before we got our first cat, I knew the goal is 1 hour a day, every day. Mm. And you know what's interesting? You came to visit recently and you were telling me how healthy our cat was, which made us both, my wife and I both, really smile with pride. But we really try to at least combined play with her an hour a day. So the play is good for you, the person, and your mental health. The play is good for the cat, you know? And it's just, we try not to just buy toys and let the cat just play with itself. And I think, and she will even come and play fetch and tell us, hey, play with me. I'm getting angry. Yeah. You know, you need to start playing with me, you know, that kind of cat.
Absolutely.
So I think if there's something I've learned from the podcast and if other people can learn from it, yeah, that 1 hour mark, you don't always hit it, but it's a nice goal.
Yeah. And I think walking your dog counts as part of that for your dog, for your cat, and or any interaction where you're actually playing with them. And, you know, you have your cat toys, they're going to get bored of toys eventually. You have to interact with them, play with them with the toy, rotate the toys, something, get new toys so you can keep them stimulated. Or just an empty box. We all know cats love boxes.
Oh, gosh.
So just like whatever you could do to keep them stimulated. I really feel like it's just stimulation that they need. Any kind of stimulation, pick them up and talk to them, just anything to interact with them so they're not just, you know, living a really mundane lifestyle where they're not getting any of their mental stimulus that they need as animals, just as regular happy animals, they have to be stimulated.
Well, I think there's also a lot of screen addiction has been an issue that I've been concerned about lately and how that can trigger a lot of depression and anxiety. And I mean, that's a great way to get off the screen. Just play with your pet.
There you go.
You know, they don't have screens that they stare at, you know?
Yeah. And filming your pet do funny stuff counts. That counts.
It doesn't count as screen time.
It counts.
We could do a whole episode on this, and I think we will in the future. All right. Can pets teach responsibility?
Can pets teach responsibility? Pets can teach responsibility. I don't think that I would use a pet to teach responsibility. I don't feel like the pets should suffer if you end up not being good at it. I think pets should be a reward for showing that you already are responsible. To use a pet to teach responsibility is really kind of gambling on a living thing, which I don't think is proper. I understand that sometimes these things just happen. You just happen upon a pet and it can teach some responsibility. But to have somebody that you're not sure of their level of dependability or reliability and to give them a living thing to take care of, to try to teach it to them, I don't feel like that's fair. I don't think that's fair. What do you think?
I think that not only do I agree with you, but we held off getting a cat for a long time because we thought we like going on vacation. We like just being out of the house and that we weren't ready. And we were moving countries too frequently. And when all of our jet setting kind of settled down and we chose Belgium to stay in for a while, then, and even after 2 more years of like becoming more responsible, becoming more, our schedule was reliable. We knew that we could financially handle it. That was the other thing. We respected the fact that like vet costs, maybe an emergency surgery, stuff like this, you want to be able to afford things.
Absolutely.
And when we were ready, I think we waited a little too long, to be honest. We were over ready. But anyways, you don't always have to go to that extreme, but maybe wait for a little while. If you don't know, maybe wait for a little while.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no harm in waiting. And again, pets do happen upon us. I totally understand if there's just a dog or a cat or a horse or a pig or a turtle that you see on the side of the road and you just have to take it home and teach you or your family some responsibility to take care of this animal that needed help. I get that. But to get a pet for somebody that you have no faith in their reliability as like a gift, I think pets make horrible gifts. That's not a gift. That's something somebody should go get for themselves, or the pet should find you.
Interesting. Pets make horrible gifts. I that is a hot take, because I think there's still, and I think it's depicted in television a lot, the puppy as a Christmas gift, the kitten.
Such a bad idea.
Yeah. You know, and I think this is stemming off of, you had a conversation, Pet Peeves Podcast Season 2, Episode 1, about grieving and the idea of when is it too soon to get a pet? And I think you had a really good take on that, to just kind of trust your gut, you know? So feeling like, are you responsible to have another pet after a previous pet has died? So I think that that's a tough call. But at least if you've had pet ownership, the pet died naturally or whatever, it wasn't because of your negligence, and you're thinking about getting another one, and you're asking yourself, kind of, again, tying in that mental health question, are you emotionally prepared to take on another pet? Well, at least you've proven you were responsible once, you know?
Right.
So, yeah. I think we have some robots that help. I'm not going to lie. We have a fountain. You recommended the fountain on the podcast, and I ended up getting the fountain. We have a robot feeder to regulate the amount of kibble that the cat's kitten is done. So we've spent some money to take a little bit of responsibility off of our shoulders, but we're still really involved. You know what I mean?
Which is still a responsibility. You have to make sure the feeder works, and that there's power, and that it's
clean,
and that you got food in it, and that the fountain,
there's like an app,
water in
it. You know, it lets you know, right?
But you got to pay attention to the app, and your phone has to be charged. You know what I mean? There's still responsibility involved. Just, you know, people think that because there's some automation that you can purchase, some technology that is going to take away the underlying responsibility, it doesn't. It's still a 24-hour, 24/7, 365 day a year job when you have a pet.
But I really like this take, because I think it's a really classic, it's a classic move for a family to say, you know what, we're going to get a puppy. We've got a couple kids, and we are going to teach the kids responsibility, and the puppies just, you know, neglect it. Because what do kids know? They don't even know how to, they don't even know how to walk themselves, let alone walk a dog, you know?
Yeah, most kids can't take care of themselves, let alone a dog. So you have to take responsibility as the parent. Mm-hmm. That's your dog. Mm-hmm. You bought it. Those kids don't have no money.
Right. Now, if you want to be the parent who teaches the kid, now it's time to walk the dog, fine. You're
different.
Teaching responsibility to the child as a result. That's nothing wrong with that. But
that's fine. That's fine. You can use, like, as chores or whatever, something to do, but it's, you know, you can't, they have to volunteer.
Right. Interesting. I hadn't thought that was such a solid no. That's interesting. Yeah. What pets live the longest?
I think parrots. I want to say birds or turtles. I'm pretty sure like some kind of tortoise or turtle is going to live forever. Parrots, these guys live like to their hundreds, and these turtles and tortoises live to be like in their hundreds. So my dad actually has a desert tortoise and a some kind of parrot. I wish I remembered the breed, but they're both already close to 30 years old. The bird and the tortoise close to 30, and they're both projected to live to be more than 100.
Wow.
So my dad's already left them to his kids, and then we'll leave them to our kids. And I think these pets will outlive us. And other than that, I know, like, I don't know, whales or something live a long time, but as far as pets go, birds and turtles.
Don't horses live quite a while, don't they?
I think horses live like 25 years or something like that.
I mean, that's something.
That's pretty long compared to like a dog or a cat, but some cats are like 20, 21.
It's
that's
impressive,
not unheard of.
That cats can live so long. I think that was what made us so upset when our cat was 9 years old and died was, you know, his health records kept getting better and better and better. And then he died during anesthesia, and we didn't understand, because to us, 9 was young. And after talking to you, I learned, well, 9's kind of middle aged, and stuff happens when you're middle aged, you know,
your senior pet after you're 7.
He was just getting ready for his senior kibble, you know, he was just preparing for the, we were hoping for a long tail, you know, into his geriatric years, but he had a little bit of arthritis, but he wasn't old. Yeah. But
I think a 17-year-old cat, that's pretty freaking old. So when I say like 2021 is common, because I see it on a regular basis, but realistically, you know, any cat, and once they're 9, 10, that's old.
Right.
any right. dog, same thing. 9, 10, big, small, breed. Yeah. I don't care. Once they're 9, 10, that's old for a dog and a cat.
You know, anecdotally, I'm not saying you need to prove this with statistics right now, but have you noticed, I guess you haven't been at the same pet hospital your whole career, but just anecdotally, have you felt that life expectancy for pets is gradually increasing as maybe the science increases over the course of your
Absolutely.
Career?
Absolutely. Yeah? Absolutely. Because the things that we used to do in vet med as maintenance for longevity, just, you know, bluntly stating, keeping animals alive a little bit longer, those treatments are better and better. So what used to keep them alive another month now might keep them alive another 6 months to a year. What used to keep them alive another 2 to 3 years might keep them alive another 5 to 10 years now. So the treatments that previously used to extend life a little bit now extend life a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. So the extension of life is always getting better when it comes to disease treatment and disease prevention. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, old age is what takes them all out eventually. Right. But as far as treating the diseases that cause death, we get better at.
Yeah, I think a lot of well-known one is the big dogs and hips, for example. Oh,
yeah. Things like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, you got big dog problems, little dog problems, you know, certain breed problems, breeds are predisposed to certain diseases. Mm-hmm. So those are the other things that we get better at, pre-diagnosing, and diagnostics are way up these days. It's way easier to diagnose diseases now than it used to be. We have better technology, better laboratories, better technicians, better histories. You know, we're better at taking animal histories because we're taking it more seriously than it was taken before. Mm-hmm. It's more like human medicine every year.
Interesting. Well, and as human life extends, you know, it makes sense if pet life extends as well. Yeah,
I think people are not as aware of that as I thought they were, that everything we do in veterinary medicine came from human medicine first. So it's all trickle down. It's all a smaller version of. There's very few things that are completely unique to animal medicine. Most of the stuff came from human medicine, and that's why we even knew to do it.
And that's why when you're in a mafia movie, you can go to a veterinarian to get the bullet taken
precisely
out,
right? Yeah. If you're ever in a crisis, you don't want a human doctor. They're so limited.
Well, also they might snitch, you know. That's why you need the vet who's been, you know, disbarred. Yeah, all that.
Exactly.
What pets does PetSmart sell? So this is something that's been Googled. This is like a popular Google topic, and I don't expect you to be a specialist on PetSmart, but maybe we can. Okay, maybe you can riff on PetSmart for a little bit.
PetSmart. I hate PetSmart, but I go to PetSmart. Okay, so I have a love-hate relationship with PetSmart. They sell factory animals. You know, they do have their cat rescue and adoption center that I think does a pretty good job. Mm-hmm. They also have the animal hospital inside of all of them. I think they're called there's a name, it starts with a B. Banfield. All the Banfield animal hospitals inside of PetSmart. So they are attempting to do things the right way, but they still have fish. They still have iguanas and like chameleons, bearded dragons, rats, mice, hamsters, gerbils. They have, sometimes I see hedgehogs, and they have birds, parakeets, and different small birds. And I think they have, what else have I seen?
I pulled this up, by the way. It says Banfield Pet Hospital. It's a private company. It's not owned by PetSmart, but they just appear in PetSmart's, right? Banfield Pet Hospital is a privately owned company based in Vancouver, Washington, United States, that operates veterinary clinics. And so they own clinics in the United States, Mexico, and United Kingdom. I didn't know that.
Yeah, Banfield's pretty big. Banfield and VCA, I think, are the biggest ones. And there's some other big ones, and those two are the biggest, I think. So the PetSmart selling, and they have those betta fish in a cup. I think that's what I think of first when I think of PetSmart and what they sell. So traditionally, as an animal advocate, you're supposed to tell people that PetSmart is bad because they used to do like puppy mills and kitten mills.
Right.
So they don't do that anymore. I don't see that.
Okay.
Now with the exotic pets and the pocket pets that they sell, to me, I feel like those animals are really being bred mostly to feed larger animals. So if you end up with one of those animals as a pet, you kind of saved it from a worse death. And what I also know about the fish that they sell, I learned, and maybe this is wrong, but this is what I was told at PetSmart, that when they get a new shipment of fish, all the previous fish that they didn't sell, they just flush down the toilet because they have such a short lifespan.
Oh, no. Okay.
That they're either going to die anyway, or they flush them down the toilet if people don't buy them. So should you buy pets from PetSmart? If you don't, they're going to die. If you don't, they're going to die. So it's not like you're not rescuing a pet. You definitely are. Are you promoting that genocide? Sort of. But I think that those exotic pets, they just have a different level of care for the normal population. They don't see them as they see a dog or a cat. And I have my bearded dragon from PetSmart. My bearded dragon came from PetSmart, and I love my bearded dragon, and he's a great pet.
Yeah.
But I kind of adopted him from someone else who got him from PetSmart.
So okay.
I didn't buy him from PetSmart. Someone else did. But I go to PetSmart to get my crickets for him. I go to PetSmart. I got my betta fish from PetSmart because they told me that if I didn't buy him, they were going to flush him. So I bought him. Actually, they gave him to me. It was free. I had to buy the bowl. I had to buy the bowl.
All right.
But they gave me the fish for free. But other than that, I mean, if you want to go to PetSmart to get your pets, I think that's fine. Just treat them well. I don't know. Maybe we should all boycott PetSmart. Maybe that's the answer.
When you were saying earlier about like, if you don't, then they'll kill them. Well, I think this gets into an interesting consumer ethics debate, mm-hmm. because I think there's a lot of people like vegans don't eat meat because they don't want to take part in that. But there's still meat in grocery stores that goes bad, right?
Yeah.
So and I've heard that argument for them. Well, you might as well eat it. It's already there, right? I think there is
absolutely
a consumer ethical argument in favor of boycotting, but it's certainly up for a little bit of debate. Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard because they're very, you know, they are trying to help your pets. That's the way I see that business. Them as a business and the people that work there. I meet those people, I go there all the time. They're good people. They love animals too. They're just trying to help.
Right.
You know, they're not looking at it like this. They are not the evil corporation. Maybe the corporation is evil, but the service they provide is necessary. I need it. I go there for my pets because the other places I try to go for my pet stuff is less reliable, lower quality, more expensive prices. And I have way more options and variety for the things that I need.
Pet upkeep, it's got to be convenient to get the food, the gear, et cetera. So our PetSmart in Europe is called Tom & Co. And when we told our veterinarian, yeah, we just go to Tom & Co. It's right down the street. He told us like grumbled and said, oh, I hate Tom & Co. Like it's just classic, right? It's mm-hmm. He might hate Tom & Co, but the food he recommended is available at Tom & Co.
You
know, it's still a store that's right down the street. I can walk there and
I'm sure you could do there should be like a Whole Foods version for PetSmart where it's all just naturally sourced and organically grown and local people making the dog sweaters or whatever. But until that exists, I don't know. I go to PetSmart. I go to a couple of different pet places. PetSmart, Petco. And a place called Distributors Feed.
Okay.
Distributors Feed is great, except for their crickets are really small. And then the crickets at PetSmart are really big and juicy. And my bearded dragon is spoiled. And
of course you want the big and juicy ones. You know, give me that cricket steak, you know?
No, PetSmart's got me hooked with those big old juicy crickets from my bearded dragon.
Well, I appreciate, Albert, that you have a nuanced take on PetSmart because, you know, you can't argue against convenience. But like in an ideal world, you know, I've been having some interesting consumer ethics conversations about a variety of consumer products and just like, should we boycott flat out everything that's bad? You know, maybe that's the ethical,
that's the woke thing to take do.
But in reality, PetSmart does some good, and like you said, the workers there, they're trying to do things better. So the puppy mill thing, they stopped doing the puppy mill thing. Were they shamed into stopping doing that?
I think everybody was. I think all the puppy mill people have been shamed, so now you just do it online behind closed doors. There's still puppy mills. I guess PetSmart's not doing it, but I guarantee whoever the person in charge of the puppy mill at PetSmart just changed the name, made it a branch, called it something different, and they're still milling out puppies.
Well, keep shaming them, people, if it makes a small
difference. I learned
in
a meeting that I had yesterday that 70% of pets did not come from a shelter. So no matter what we do, 70% of people are still going out and buying pets from breeders. And most breeders are crooked. Most breeders are crooked. I can say that with confidence. There are some great breeders out there. There are some breeders out there who actually are doing it for the right reasons. Most breeders are doing it for money. And that's the problem.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we could do a whole episode on that, and I'm sure we will in the future. Well, we're running out of time, Albert, so let's start to wrap things up here. What do you say? Yes. And the big thing I wanted to talk to you guys, give me my music. Come on. Give me my music. Well, we'll pipe in the music later. Sorry about that, guys. If you have a pet-related question for Albert that you would like to have answered on the show, please email it to us at petpeevespodcast@gmail.com. That's Pet Peeves Podcast, all lowercase, guys, no spaces, petpeevespodcast@gmail.com. So Albert, any final words before we go? That's the first Q&A. How you feeling?
That was awesome. I'm feeling really good. Thank you, Michael. I appreciate this and all your production. And thank you guys for listening, and definitely send questions. We want this to be as helpful as possible.
All right. I'll bring in the music and let's fade it on out. All right. Thanks, Albert. Thanks, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
And we'll see you next time.
See you later.